Alzheimer's. It's the seventh leading cause of death in America, and a fact that's never far from the mind of Fred Major.
You just got to keep the faith, and I'm not a religious man, I'm just talking plain faith, that you're going to see it from start to end, because it is the most intense thing that I've ever dealt with in my life.
Major doesn't suffer from Alzheimer's disease, but one of his loved ones does. And a couple of years ago, Major and his family recorded their thoughts and experiences of the disease with the StoryCorps project at the Massachusetts and New Hampshire chapter of the Alzheimer's Association.
And, like I say, through love, respect, we'll make it through it. So, you know, anybody that's going to listen to this, I just want them to hold on, because it's going to be a ride.
More than 5 million Americans are already on that life-altering ride. But as our understanding of the disease has progressed since it was first identified in 1906, the way doctors diagnosed Alzheimer's has not changed in a quarter century. Patients present their symptoms, memory loss, confusion, or other cognitive impairments, and doctors map the progress of those symptoms. A conclusive diagnosis often only comes after death. But that could soon change, because earlier this month, the National Institute on Aging and the Alzheimer's Association proposed new diagnostic guidelines that use state-of-the-art physical tests, some of which may make it possible to detect the disease long before the onset of memory loss. The new diagnosis could also triple the number of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, triple the number of people who must take that heart-rending ride Fred Major knows so well. So, listeners, would you take a test that could tell you if you were going to suffer from Alzheimer's before the onset of symptoms? Have you or someone you know been diagnosed with Alzheimer's? And if so, do you wish that there was a test that could have spotted the disease earlier? And beyond that, do we have the support structures in place to help what could soon be a ballooning number of patients with this disease? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us online on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And joining us now is Dr. Brad Hyman. He's director of the Massachusetts Alzheimer's Disease Research Center and was one of the medical experts who developed the new guidelines, or helped to develop the new guidelines for doctors, that were presented by the National Institute on Aging earlier this month. Dr. Hyman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for having me here.
I should also mention that after our conversation, listeners, if you've still got unanswered questions and would like to pick up where we leave off, we're going to have a live web chat with Dr. Hyman at our website. You'll be able to find that at wbur.org/Radio Boston. So, Dr. Hyman, can you tell us now, first of all, I want to talk about these new suggestions for how we will diagnose Alzheimer's in the future. But take us a little bit into the details of how it's currently diagnosed when a patient comes in and says, "Doctor, I'm worried."
Great, exactly. So the current criteria were developed in 1984. They're called the McCann criteria, because Guy McCann, a professor of neurology at Hopkins, developed them. Guy McCann developed the current criteria, too, so I guess we'll probably call these McCann 2s. Mm. So 25 years ago, the thought was that a patient came to the clinic and they suffered from memory problems primarily, and if they met certain criteria for age, for the type of memory problem that they had, for having formal memory tests from a neuropsychologist, that they would get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And those criteria have really done a fairly good job over the course of the last 25 years of helping physicians across the world really diagnose Alzheimer's disease, and are part of the reason why we know that there's 5 million Americans now mm-hmm. who suffer from the disease.
Mm-hmm.
A lot's changed in the last 25 years. One of the things that in retrospect was maybe wrong about the criteria in 1984 was that you had to be pretty severely impaired to get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease then. So you had to have impairments of day-to-day activities, really to the point where you couldn't carry out household chores, where you couldn't carry out your job. Things that were more subtle, just memory problems, things that got in the way but didn't really stop you from doing things, weren't considered to be enough of a problem to warrant a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And our thinking about that has changed over the years.
Dr. Hyman, if I may, so one of the key things that I was sort of reading about today is that the the way things currently stand, the definitive, the absolute definitive diagnosis sometimes comes in an autopsy after an Alzheimer's patient has passed away because it's evident that they have these things known as plaques in the brain. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Is it safe to say that we know that people are suffering from Alzheimer's, but until now there hasn't been a way to say for sure without some kind of physical exam post-mortem that indeed is exactly what was happening in the brain?
Well, so the difference that's important to keep in mind here is that the symptoms are not thinking well. And there's lots of reasons people don't think well. For example, Monday morning is a good reason not to be thinking so perfectly. So the symptom of not thinking well can be caused by many different causes, one of which, and the most common of which, by far, is Alzheimer's disease. But to be absolutely certain, back in 1984, that it was Alzheimer's disease, instead of one of these other problems, you had to look at a piece of the brain under the microscope.
After death. Okay.
After death.
So that is what brings us then to these new proposed procedures or diagnostic procedures that were suggested this month by the National Institutes on Aging and the Alzheimer's Association, which really focus on a physical test that can be done while a person is alive and even before a person may have those very serious symptoms of Alzheimer's. So can you walk us through what these new tests are?
Absolutely. So the question that we challenge ourselves with is, can we do a better job? Can we figure this out more accurately? And can we figure it out earlier? Because it's obvious that people don't suddenly become demented, that it's a slow process that takes years to develop. And can we move back that time when we can make a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease earlier and earlier? But of course, how early you go, the symptoms become more and more subtle. So simply not remembering where your car is at the Stop and Shop parking lot doesn't mean that you've got Alzheimer's disease.
It happens to the best of us.
At least I hope it doesn't. So the goal of this is to ask, at what point can we really be pretty sure that there's something wrong? And are there other tools that we now have in this sort of diagnostic toolbox that can help us get it right and move it earlier?
Mm-hmm. And these other tools, I read, include a new form of a brain scan that can potentially detect those plaques that we were talking about in the brain much, much earlier.
There are three or four different kinds of brain scans that are commonly used in clinical practice. And one new type of brain scan called a PET scan, which is still experimental, but which we believe will become used in clinical practice within the next few years. And that experimental program, which sees the actual little plaques in the brain, is the thing that most people are most excited about because it's almost as if having an autopsy while the patient's still alive.
And many years before maybe they are even showing signs of memory loss, things like that.
It turns out that patients who with very subtle symptoms and even some patients who seem to you and me to be perfectly fine have some plaques already in their brain.
Hmm. Okay. And there are two other tests I see. That one is a spinal tap or a sampling of spinal fluid of some kind?
Exactly. So spinal fluid examination is something that physicians have been doing for 100 years for a variety of reasons, meningitis and encephalitis, fever workups and so forth, very commonly used procedure. And a new test that's been available really for the past 3 or 4 years measures the amount of amyloid, that same molecule that makes the plaques in the brain, in the spinal fluid. And from the measurement of the amount of amyloid in the spinal fluid, you can get a pretty good sense of whether or not there are plaques in the brain and whether or not somebody will go on to have Alzheimer's disease or has it right then.
So it seems that the medical technology has really caught up and actually surpassed, you know, the 1980s diagnostic criteria. And so now we are sort of perched on the edge with these new suggested procedures of having people potentially be diagnosed with Alzheimer's earlier than ever before and more people than ever before. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. So it seems as if there are people who have memory problems for a variety of reasons. Some of them are just worried well. Some of them are people who are, in fact, in the earliest stages of Alzheimer's disease, some of whom have some other problem entirely and may be attributed to Alzheimer's disease but are wrong.
So there could be potential for misdiagnosis.
So there's a potential for misdiagnosis in every direction. There are people who worry that they have Alzheimer's and don't, and it would be great to be able to reassure them. There are people who worry that they have Alzheimer's disease, in fact, have no disease at all, but are just worried. It would be great to reassure them. And those people who are, in fact, destined to have Alzheimer's disease, well, I personally believe that one of the things that physicians do is to educate people, to help them understand what's happening to them, to help them understand what's happening to their loved ones, mm-hmm. and to guide them through the process, in addition, of course, to doing our best to provide them with adequate therapies.
We are talking about emerging research on the field of Alzheimer's and new tests that could make it possible to detect the disease before the onset of its symptoms and earlier than ever before. You can join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Grant's calling from Scituate. Welcome to Radio Boston, Grant.
Thank you very much. My father died of Alzheimer's.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And I am 53 now myself. He died at 73, so that's 20 years from now. Anytime I have a memory lapse or a word-finding problem, you know, it's that little niggly back-of-the-mind worry, I would definitely get the testing done. Matter of fact, where do I sign up? The PET scan sounds much more appealing than the spinal tap, but I can retire when I'm 59. I will have had 30 years in my chosen profession and vested in a pension plan, and if I were told that it was part of my future, I think my wife and I would retire earlier.
Mm. Grant, stay on the line for just a second. Let me get Dr. Hyman to answer your question. Are these tests currently available?
The spinal fluid test is available. The PET scan is not yet available, although, as I say, we're fully expecting it that it will be in the next year or two. But you bring up a great point, Grant. Why make a diagnosis? And one of the reasons certainly is to help intercede to support patients and help them plan their own futures. And some people will want to know their futures. Other people might not. And as a physician, you'd be sensitive to those issues. But it's entirely possible. And most of my patients really want to know what's going to happen to them.
Grant, it sounds like you feel the same way, that the certainty is better than the uncertainties, given that you went through this with your father.
Yeah, I would make plans accordingly. Again, I'd retire at 59 rather than figure I had more years than me in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not sure where we're going to retire to. And I think I would choose to be near a major metropolitan area like Boston, where they'd have the most current medical interventions.
Grant, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Hyman, if you could stand by for just a moment, we've got to take a quick break, and then there's several other voices, knowledgeable voices on this topic we'd like to bring into the conversation. We are talking about new research and new diagnostic tests for Alzheimer's disease. If you could find out earlier than ever that you might have this devastating disease, would you take these tests? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back. Radio Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about new developments in the field of Alzheimer's disease research. This month, medical experts proposed new diagnostic procedures based on emerging technology that could make it possible to test for the disease even before the onset of memory loss. So would you take it? Would you take a test that maybe in your 40s or 50s would tell you that you may have Alzheimer's disease? Have you been through the disease yourself? With yourself or a family member, what was it like? And if we do have a potential threefold increase in the number of Americans suffering from Alzheimer's, do we have the ability to care for them all? Do we have the support structures in place? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined by Dr. Brad Hyman. He's a neurologist and director of the Massachusetts Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at the Massachusetts General Hospital and also at Harvard Medical School. We'll be joined in a moment by Dr. Janice Petzl and Jim Wessler of the Alzheimer's Association in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. But before we go to them, Dr. Hyman, I mean, a question that's been raised, that gets raised immediately when you think, oh my gosh, what happens when I get diagnosed at age 40 or 50s? What can you do when you find out at such a young age? What's the next step for people?
Right now, there are treatments that are available for Alzheimer's disease that have modest benefit. But we really are hopeful that over the course of the next few years, some of the treatments that are now in experimental therapies will come online and be able to intervene. And we really think that intervening early in the disease process, not waiting until after people are severely impaired, but adding medicines before the brain is too severely damaged, is the key to ultimately beating this disease.
But at this point in time, we don't know if it would beat it, but it may slow the progression of the disease down.
That's everybody's hope.
Okay. Well, joining us now is Dr. Janice Petzl. She's a geriatric psychologist and adjunct assistant professor of community and family medicine at Dartmouth University. She also works at the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Augusta, Maine. But she doesn't speak for the VA, but she is here to talk to us about Alzheimer's disease. Dr. Petzl, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So I understand that you have some concerns about this sort of raft of new diagnostic procedures that's in development and that could be recommended to doctors fairly soon. What are your concerns?
Yes, I do. I'm actually a psychiatrist, not a psychologist.
Okay, my apologies for that.
The concerns I have are that I don't see any evidence yet that these evaluation techniques are going to give us any early benefit, in that it doesn't show that the results from the tests give you any more information than a good history would give you early on. And then we don't really have any treatments yet that will change the course of the illness. So you're going to put people through expensive tests that you can't do much about at this point. So I think the focus is still great for research, but it's not quite ready for clinical prime time yet.
Mm-hmm. I understand when you mentioned treatment that I was reading earlier today that there's some 100 potential drugs in the pipeline that may target these amyloid plaques that are in the brain, the signature aspect of Alzheimer's, but that also recently some, almost a dozen clinical trials made by drug companies failed to show any cognitive improvement when the brain was cleared of plaques. I know there's a lot of studies out there that may show the other another outcome, but it sounds like the science isn't conclusive yet on really how to prevent or fully slow the progress of the disease.
No, unfortunately not. I'm afraid that by focusing on plaques, we've gotten into the illness further downstream than we need to be. We need to be finding what triggers the whole cellular process in the first place.
And so I've also read that you said we should expand our horizons in terms of how we think of the disease or other ways to diagnose it. And can you explain a little bit more about that?
Well, just as I just said, we haven't really figured out what starts the cascade of the illness in the first place. And there are all sorts of fascinating ideas, but most of the research studies have focused on the plaques and tangles, which was a great place to start. But I think looking at other avenues would probably be beneficial, too, looking at cell-to-cell communication. How does one cell in the line of synapses that are in the brain, how do they talk to each other? How do they keep each other happy? Is there some infectious cause? There's this fascinating idea that early on in the illness, a person's sense of smell gets disrupted, and the neurons that come from the nose actually come into the parts of the brain that seem to be impaired in early dementia. So there's all kinds of fascinating clues here and there that aren't getting as much attention because we're focused on plaques and tangles.
Mm. But on the other hand, Dr. Petzl, I mean, we have the baby boomer generation that's, obviously a huge cohort here in the United States, and they're entering late middle age, and the number of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's, regardless of these new tests, is likely to go up. So can you tell us what the future is for the United States, for the medical community, for people knowing that we are on the sort of crest of this wave of more Alzheimer's diagnoses?
Yeah, it's quite frightening, isn't it? The disease ends up sucking so much energy out of the whole community. Middle-aged caregivers are caring for their elderly parents, so their careers are interrupted. A lot of the resources that we could be using for other kinds of medical care are going into long-term care for people with dementia. It is a crisis proportions, actually, and with the baby boomers starting to get older, I think Everybody's going to be over 65 in the year 2030 in the baby boom, so that's a lot of people to care for.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Dr. Janice Petzl. She's a geriatric psychiatrist and adjunct assistant professor at Dartmouth University. She's a professor of community and family medicine there. Dr. Petzl, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Hyman, your response to Dr. Petzl's concerns here that maybe we may be doing more harm than good in offering these early tests.
I understand completely, Dr. Petzl does, that we don't have the perfect treatments yet. In fact, we have treatments that are only modestly beneficial. But I really do believe that we shouldn't be paternalistic about our patients, that if a patient presents and has concerns and has worries, that we should do our very best to use the technology that we have at hand, the diagnostic toolbox that we have, to tell them what's wrong and to help support them, to provide them with tools to be safe, to give them realistic expectations of what their futures might hold. And that's a real service and a real value, even if our hopes for improved therapies don't come to fruition.
We have many callers who want to join us. John is on the line from Wareham. Welcome to Radio Boston, John.
Hi, how are you? Nice for you to take my call. My wife suffers from end-stage Alzheimer's right now. She was diagnosed or presented symptoms when she was 57. And I would be unenthusiastic about any kind of early diagnosis, notwithstanding the fact that it came as a shock to us, because anyone diagnosed with this disease right now is, as Dr. Petzl pointed out, consigned to a horrible affliction that robs the person of their personhood, their personality, their ability to think, their ability to function. It's a horrible, corrosive disease, and I don't think without any treatment, any real treatment or any relief from that suffering and that disease on the horizon, any early diagnosis is simply adding insult to injury, and it would do no one any good to simply know years in advance that they were consigned to that kind of disease.
John, thank you so much for sharing your story and for your call. I wanted to actually turn your point to Jim Wessler. He's president of the Massachusetts and New Hampshire chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mr. Wessler. And you heard John just then saying that early diagnosis doesn't do any good when there's no treatment. And I would say also he's getting to the point that maybe the support systems we have in place aren't adequate for people, the millions of people who already have Alzheimer's. So how would we deal with having a threefold increase in the potential in the number of people who are suffering or believe they will be suffering from the disease?
Well, Maimon, that's a great question, and John's point is certainly very telling. I have a few comments. One is I want to go back, and Dr. Hyman touched on this, on the new criteria which are really just a template where a lot more work has to be done on the pre-symptomatic, which is probably what John is asking about. Why do I want to know about this even before I've had symptoms? One of the issues, and as you indicated, we have about half a dozen or so drug trials that have been unsuccessful recently, and Dr. Hyman, I know, would confirm this, is that concern is that in the current clinical trials to try to find effective treatments, we're actually getting the drugs to people too late. Mm. That too much destructive process has happened in the brain. So from a research and a clinical trial point of view, these criteria are absolutely fundamental to trying to unlock the mystery of Alzheimer's disease from a treatment point of view. We need to get people what we call disease-modifying drugs before those terrible symptoms and that whole pathway that John was just referencing. So I think the listeners need to understand from a scientific and a research point of view, we need both the drug discovery and the diagnostic process to move hand in hand together. Because to be giving people medical interventions when it's too late is not helpful, and obviously is even discouraging both to the general public and even to the pharmaceutical industry.
And Jim Wessler, what about the psychological and social supports that people and their caregivers and their family members need? I mean, that's one of the most horrific things, if I can say, about Alzheimer's, that it doesn't just affect the person suffering from it, but it ripples out and affects their whole family. And I can only imagine that need would only grow with increased diagnosis and early diagnosis.
Absolutely. I mean, here at the Alzheimer's Association, and we are a nationwide organization. I'm the CEO of just in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, but we help here tens of thousands and nationwide hundreds of thousands of families. And you are absolutely right. It is a devastating disease. We estimate today that there are 5.3 million Americans with Alzheimer's disease, and you can easily double that to the caregivers. And not only spouses like John, but adult children, grandchildren are all incredibly affected by this disease, and people's lives are changed, as was indicated earlier, where one has to leave work or move to be close to a parent who maybe doesn't have any other support structure.
Mm-hmm.
Do we currently have the support structure in place? Absolutely not. In fact, one of the concerns we have at the Alzheimer's Association is that as a nation, we have really not awoken to the critical public health and, as you say, the family and social costs of this disease. We need to not only bring the medical attention that researchers like Dr. Hyman are today working on, but we need to be investing and paying attention to the family and social costs and make sure that we have a service infrastructure in place in this country to support the millions of Americans who are going to be developing Alzheimer's disease in the coming years.
Jim Wessler and Dr. Hyman, stand by. We've got a lot of people who have a say on this. Melissa's calling from Cambridge. Welcome to Radio Boston, Melissa.
Hi. I'm currently right now on my way to my grandparents' house to give them dinner and their evening meds. They both have Alzheimer's. And so this is something I deal with on a daily basis, though I'm not their primary caregiver. And my understanding is that, or I would assume that if we had earlier testing available, that one, we would have more people able to advocate for more different types of treatment and studies when they're still, you know, able to do that for themselves, and also to plan for their care better. My grandparents live in a non-assisted housing development for elderly people, and I believe if they had more of an understanding, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, they may have made different choices. And now, you know, we pay for aides to come in every day, multiple times a day, instead of, you know, having been prepared for this.
Melissa, it also sounds like your grandparents couldn't get by if it weren't for you as well. So, I mean, in that sense, has Alzheimer's become central to your life?
It is, and more so my parents and their generation. They do a majority of their care, and they split it amongst all the siblings. And I help out when I can, but it's a huge burden to my mother and her siblings, and it's heartbreaking. You know, they're dealing with their parents who can no longer care for themselves, and it's heartbreaking every day.
Melissa, thank you so much for your call. Let's get another one in here. Anita's calling from Medford. Welcome to Radio Boston, Anita.
Hi, thank you. I'd like to ask Dr. Hyman, aren't they using EEGs to determine what's going on in the brain? My mother had dementia in 96, and they gave her an EEG, and they said 30% of her brain was frozen, but it was not Alzheimer's. So I'm wondering, isn't it all dementia that should be addressed as the causes of all dementia?
Anita, I'm sorry to interrupt, but thank you for your question. Dr. Hyman, your response to Anita.
It's a super question, Anita, and you're right. Dementia is a term that's used to mean the symptoms of the brain not working right. And there are many, many different causes of dementia. In fact, one of the reasons for these new criteria is to try to hone in better on those causes of dementia that are really due to Alzheimer's instead of something else. And so there's a lot of different diagnostic tests that a neurologist or a psychiatrist or an internist would use to diagnose which type of medical condition is causing the symptoms, is causing the dementia. So you're right. These things are really important to get right.
Mm. Jim Wessler of the Massachusetts and New Hampshire chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. You know, I read that, we heard Melissa on her way to her grandparents' house to deliver their meals, and they both suffer from Alzheimer's. I read that 70% of families in America coping with Alzheimer's are taking care of their loved ones essentially themselves without any external help. And so I wonder, is there a movement, any recognition, any funding, insurance companies, anything happening to prepare us, as you mentioned, for this coming wave?
It's a great question. I think we're slow on this. I mean, I will say for your listeners that the Alzheimer's Association is a place that they can turn to, and we, all of our services to families and the general public actually are free of charge. So we have immense amount of resources, from support groups to educational programs to a 24-hour helpline to family counseling services. throughout certainly Massachusetts and Hampshire and throughout the nation. So that does exist, and we are growing as we are literally having an avalanche of families turning to us for assistance. But your question, I think, is a great one. I don't believe we have yet fully recognized how critical the issue of caregiving. I mean, statistics tell us that up to a third of elderly caregivers, usually a spouse, predecease the person they're caring for. Now, that person undoubtedly has their own chronic health issues, and that may be partly the cause of death. But the stress of caregiving 24 hours is just incredible. So right now, does insurance companies or Medicare pay for the sort of family support, certainly, that we provide and we think is critical? The answer is no, and that needs to change.
Let me just turn the last question to Dr. Brad Hyman here. So these are proposed new ways of diagnosing the disease. Has the proposal been embraced by the medical community?
You know, before I answer that, I just want to reinforce to your listeners what a great job the Alzheimer's Association does and how important they are to help support families and patients, and how they really do answer the phone and help enormously. So having said that, and it's really important to give them an enormous amount of credit, I'll turn to your question, which is whether these new criteria have been embraced. And I think they really have been widely accepted by the medical community. There's not very much new. It's just really an update over the last 25 years, acknowledging these new technologies and some information that has evolved over the course of the last two decades that we just weren't aware of back in 1984.
So it seems like we're at this crux where we could have many more diagnoses, but we still don't have a cure, and uncertain medication and uncertain, even social structures to treat them. So where does that leave people today on the choice of whether or not to have these tests? Would you? It sounds like you still recommend they do it.
I think that it's a very individual question, but the answer is that for an individual who really wants to know, we have the ability now to tell them. And from a research and clinical point of view, it's the critical next step.
That's Dr. Brad Hyman. He's a neurologist and director of the Massachusetts Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at MGH and also at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Hyman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
We were also joined by Jim Wessler. He's president of the Massachusetts and New Hampshire chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Mr. Wessler, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
I should also remind you listeners that Dr. Hyman will be participating in a web chat right after this show. It's at wbur.org/Boston. You can ask him some more questions there. There's much more Radio Boston after the break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll be right back.